Hello and welcome to High and Low, a Kurosawa podcast. I am your one host, Spencer, and the other co-host is here too. You know,
Joel. My name is Joel.
Yeah,
you always forget my name.
Yeah, the other one.
Aye.
So, if you couldn't tell by the title, this is yet another very special episode. This one is on a little director by the name of Ozu. Have you heard of him?
Let me tell you, the first time I heard about Ozu, I used to listen to Film Spotting, which is you know, kind of a big film nerd podcast.
Prime or SVU?
Prime, not SVU.
Okay.
And they did, like, you know how they do, like, blind spotting, where they, like, watch a director's work or, like, genre work?
Mm-hmm.
For a while and talk about the older movies. They did one for Ozu.
Hmm.
And I did not know who the hell this person was, but I wasn't, you know, I was just getting into film myself at the time. And I watched one or two because I was doing this Criterion alphabet thing where I was going letter by letter, watching the first movie from each letter. And I got, you know, Early Spring that way.
Mm.
And I really liked it. I haven't seen that many, including, you know, with the two that we watched here, especially for this, I've only seen three, I think.
Oh.
Or, sorry, five.
That's almost double.
Yeah. And not even his most famous one, which I think is Tokyo Story.
Yeah, that's one I have not seen either. I've seen maybe, well, I first heard of Ozu when I first got into Kurosawa, when I got Netflix after, like 4 years ago, you know, when by the time everyone had it except me. And when I was just picking random old Japanese movies, I kept seeing Ozu pop up. And I was like, well, I might as well start watching some of his stuff. And I think the first one I saw might have been In Autumn Afternoon, which was was his last movie. When that's
right.
Yeah, that's still my favorite Ozu one.
Autumn Afternoon.
Yeah, 62.
Because
he died from cancer next year.
Well, thanks for bringing us down.
No, well, we're going to get to that at some point.
All right. There it is, Autumn Afternoon.
Has the one guy you use all the time, Shichu Ryu.
I see that, yeah.
Yeah, that guy, he was in, looked up his filmography, he was in majority of Ozu's films, and majority of his film work is Ozu.
He's got a bunch of Kurosawa stuff, too.
Yeah, some. No, a little bit.
Dreams, Redbeard, The Bad Sleep Well.
Yeah. I'm not sure who he was in Bad Sleep Well. I'm trying to remember.
Based on his face. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure either.
Let's see. Okay, so, like the, Suzuki special episode, this will be the first part we'll cover his life and style of film, style of whatever you know what I mean, and, like his influence. And then we'll go into the movies that we watched of him. And because I was kind of busy with work, and his movies kind of tend to can be like over 2 hours, I kind of picked ones that were shorter. And so first we'll talk about his life and stuff, but then we'll get to talking about one of his early movies from 1930. I Graduated, but it's a silent film, and The other one is Good Morning from 1959. It's the one with fart jokes in it.
Wait, are you talking about the two we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, we watched I Flunked, but not I Graduated.
Okay. Get those. There are like too many of those titles. I get
mixed up. Yeah. I mean, he's got that. He's got that. And the only other one is I Was Born, but.
Yeah. But, Good Morning is the one with fart jokes. And the kid shits his pants a couple times in it. Good stuff. Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah.
All right. So I'll start with his life because there's not much I could find. So I use TCM because that's a great source for this type of information. Ozu was born in Tokyo in 1903, December 12th, and he died December 12th, 1963. So he died on his birthday when he turned 60. He lived with his mom his entire life, apparently, and he also never married or had children. Just dedicated to making movies and nothing else.
Mm.
Yeah, with Curse, with like other people, you find about like their military career and early life, but I just couldn't find much on Ozu, who must be like a private guy. But as a student, he would skip school to go see movies, and he particularly loved American movies and Harold Lloyd and his early films when he started making silent movies were Harold Lloyd inspired silent comedies. Well, comedy drama? I don't know. What would you consider I Flunked?
It's definitely comedy drama with the... Yeah, I mean, it's an emphasis on comedy. The drama part is, like, whatever.
Yeah. So Ozu, much like Kurosawa and Suzuki, they all love American films. They all love, like, the studio Hollywood pictures. And I think it's interesting that Ozu is considered the most Japanese director, but he was initially inspired by American films, where Kurosawa was also inspired by American films. Well, I clear that. Ozu was praised in Japan during his lifetime, and he took American influence, but Kurosawa did the same thing and was not praised for it.
Mm. I mean, do you think that has something to do with the amount of showmanship in each of their styles? Because Ozu is low-key compared to Kurosawa, like, 100%.
Yeah, it might be part of it. Because, like, Kurosawa is, I guess, more bombastic.
Bombastic body, He's
more about, like, this... Like the cinematic experience.
And spectacle.
Yeah. And Ozu was all about just making stories about real life and real life people.
Yeah, very slice of life. It's his movies all have a very similar pacing and style, at least the ones that I'm familiar with.
Okay, so the studio he worked for, Shochiku Studios, they started in the 1880s as a theater company, and it expanded into multiple theaters, and then once movies became a thing, it became a movie studio in 1920, and Ozu started working there in 23 as a assistant cameraman and assistant director. And so he was 20 years old at the time, and so he worked on stuff for 4 years, and then in 1927 he got his first film made called Sort of Penitence. It's lost to time. No one knows what happened to it. And his earliest known film is called Student Romance, Days of Youth. It's from 1929. But, yeah. Most of his early silent era stuff just doesn't exist anymore. No one knows what happened to it.
Just got recycled or burnt down or something, yeah.
Yeah, probably.
He still has a ton of silent movies that are available.
Oh, yeah, he made, like, at that point, 4 or 5 movies per year. Well, not that much, but, like, he would make multiple movies per year from, like, 1927 to, like, the late 30s-ish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we do have some silent stuff still, but not all of it, and some of it's just chunks and pieces. And he was praised in, we mentioned he was praised in Japan and his home country for being a brilliant filmmaker, for staying culturally Japanese, which, you know, in Japan, we discussed in the Gojira episode that, like, culturally in Japan, it's not frowned upon to have to be foreign, but it's kind of, I don't know how to explain it.
They just have a higher appreciation for things that are of their culture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, it's like most countries that have part of the government money going to arts or things like that. They expect you to show a certain amount of Japanese culture or Canadian culture in the case of Canada, or there was some place I was just hearing about recently that was being criticized because every movie that was being funded through government funding had to have, like, our country's the best. I can't remember what it was now.
Let's see. So, Ozu was seen as too Japanese to be exported to foreign countries. So during his lifetime, his movies stayed in Japan. Mm. Didn't really leave Japan. And so he made basically, for his whole career, at least one movie per year-ish. And except for 1942 to 1946, where he where the government put him in a propaganda unit department to make propaganda films. And then once that department was shut down, he went back to making the movies again. And he never really had a slump in his career. He was consistently successful. But late spring in 49 really boosted his career and made him, and that's like seen as the start of his prime, and he stayed in that prime until his death 13 years later.
I see.
I think he stayed in his prime.
Well, yeah, all the top movies that I'm looking at, like Early Summer, Tokyo Story, Tokyo Twilight, or Spring, Good Morning came out that time, then, yeah. Just the ones that are, I'm just looking at the list that's available on Filmstruck. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not sure if there are movies that are in between here. Like, things that I've heard of before Late Spring came out, Record of a Tenement Gentleman.
Yeah, because I watched that one. But for extra work, you didn't.
Oh, no. We'll talk about the ones that we've seen besides that. Yeah, that's about it, actually.
Mm.
Maybe an Inn in Tokyo. I don't know if that's just because I've been seeing the name.
Yeah, there's one. Wait. No, never mind. I'm thinking of a 30s Mizoguchi movie instead.
We'll cut it out.
I will. It features your father in a supporting role as a police officer in a couple scenes.
I'm glad he's still getting work.
Yep, he was a young man of 35 at the time.
Oh, yeah, in his prime.
Yep. So, Ozu was not really world famous the way Kurosawa was. during his lifetime. But after he died, his films got exported, because I imagine he probably had a part in that too, his films not being exported. Although I couldn't find much about whether or not he had a say in that. But after he died, his films became widely available internationally. And who was it? Paul Schrader of Taxi Driver fame, you know, movie he wrote with his brother Leonard, and, you know, Hardcore, other stuff Paul Schrader's done. When he went to UCLA, he discovered Ozu, and he is accredited with, like, introducing the influence of Ozu to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and he claims that Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, and American Gigolo are all Enzo influenced.
And I'm trying let me think about that.
That's what he claims. I'm trying to figure out the Ozu influence in, like, Taxi Driver. And I kind of see it a little bit. And
I can see it a little bit in Raging Bull, I guess. But, yeah, not...
Yeah, like, he claims they're all, like, big, at least, in, like, initially inspired by Ozu.
I'd like to hear what specifically, because that's, I mean, that's quite a leap.
Yeah.
I'm sure the guy who made all those Jim Carrey movies with Jim Carrey was inspired by Kurosawa, but it's not, I don't think he'd be like, oh, wait, Kurosawa inspired me.
Yeah.
Paul Schrader's a weirdo anyways, you know, he didn't have, like, TV and stuff when he was growing up.
Yeah. So, did you ever read Raging Bulls? No, Easy Riders and Raging Bulls?
No, I did not.
It's a really good book on 60s and 70s Hollywood, and they talk about the Schrader brothers, and, like, their, when they grew up, their parents were evangelical Christians, and they were also abusive to Paul and Leonard, and, like, if they caught them listen to radio, they'd be whipped with a electrical cord.
Mm.
With, like, you know, the metal part out.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you know, stuff like that.
Keep those kids in line.
And then when they got to college, they left and went to college, they, you know, did drugs, got drunk and, like, bought hookers all the time. Because, you know, that's what happens when you repress your kids that harshly.
That's a Rumspringer.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So Paul Schrader. Oh, yeah, I remember what I was going to say. Look at Taxi Driver. It's kind of. Taxi Driver, like, the combination of Kurosawa and Ozu, because Scorsese is a big Kurosawa guy. And. Like, I think it's kind of, well, not all his stuff, but it's clear in some of his stuff, like, that a Kurosawa influence that, and, like, I don't, whatever. Anyways, but, like, it's interesting, like, seeing a big Kurosawa guy make a script from a big Ozu guy, and so Taxi Driver's kind of, like, in very loose, broad terms, a mix of Kurosawa and Ozu. I think, but, you know, it's not like...
I was just reading about Ozu skipping class so he could go see movies in high school.
Yeah. I know I'm talking about the Taxi Driver thing. Anyway, so other, like, directors that I either, like, noticed or influenced by Ozu or have stated are Jim Jarmusch, which is very clear.
Yeah, that's clear.
Wes Anderson.
That's also pretty clear, yep.
Wim Wenders?
I think I've only seen one Wim Wenders movie.
I have not seen anything from him.
Hmm.
Peter Haneke?
Haneke? Yeah. Oh, no. Who's Peter Haneke? I don't know who that is.
Haneke?
I know who Michael Haneke is.
I'm not sure. I did a lot of notes, so I didn't... James Mangold of the...
I definitely saw that in Wolverine.
And he made a big deal during the press for Wolverine saying that Ozu was a big influence.
Oh, he can go... I don't even know. Oh, hand key. Okay. Yeah, this is an Australian... Mm. Or an Austrian playwright. That's interesting.
Let's see. Yeah, Ozu's influence is kind of everywhere. And, yeah.
Let's see. I've actually seen one of his movies, La Havre.
Let's see. So, in terms of... Well, with Ozu's style, it was very simplistic, and I watched two video essays on Ozu's style. One's called Yasujiro Ozu, Depth of Simplicity, on Channel Criswell on YouTube. It's a very well-done, very well-informed film essay, video essay on Ozu's work. It really made me appreciate Ozu as a pure technician, of a cinematic technician, more so. I think he's a better director than Kurosawa, in certain ways.
Is that your opinion, or the person that the video you were talking about?
In my opinion, in certain ways, he's.
Well, I think that they have very different directing styles. I think that.
I feel like Kurosawa...
They both have, a mastery, though, of certain things.
Yeah, I feel like Kurosawa is more well-rounded. Do kind of a bit of everything.
Right. Ozu didn't really stretch out, outside of what he's probably most famous for. Like we said, just these Japanese slice-of-life stuffs. Seemed like Kurosawa was willing to chop into a bunch of different things.
Yeah. Kurosawa was... Did stuff about post-war Japan and I Live in Fear, and then he did a few years later did Yojimbo, which was a fun western. So he was all over the place. He did Scandal, which is a Hollywood, his take on a studio Hollywood picture, and then he did Rashomon the next year. So he's all over the place.
Yeah, historical pieces, modern day stuff.
Yeah, even did
comedies and dramas.
He did.
Dare even Sue. His form of action movies.
Yeah, and Dare Sue is a biographical film.
Right.
So
about himself. He lived in the wild.
Who?
Akira Kurosawa.
No,
he didn't. Come on.
Okay. Ozu was credited with. He worked in a genre of Gandai Gaki films, which means modern life. And it's basically the Japanese films of modern life clashing with traditional culture.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he did
with 100%,
100%. With his whole career, which is not a slight at his movies, that they're all kind of the same. That was the point, because that's what he just wanted to do.
Well, if that's what he was interested in, yeah.
Yeah, and he was good at it.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that he found enough drama in everyday life, enough comedy in everyday life to make these good films, you know?
Yeah, and they're almost... I think they're all centered around family, pretty much. All the ones I've seen are all... centered around a family of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, neighborhoods, families, children, I don't know how much other teenage type things they have, but the silent film we watched is dealing with college students, and I'm using quotation marks because they look like they're all 30. But
so Ozu initially started with a more Hollywood, very cinematic style, but as he made more movies, he has reduced the style to a very straightforward, very simplistic way that looks that watches movies. I feel like I could make this, but then I realized no, I couldn't because I'm not Ozu.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
Yeah, he's a true master. He makes it look very easy.
Stop trying to be Ozu.
But, so... He's mainly notable for low angles. And, like, so in a scene with in a room, there'd be... The camera would be a few, like, a foot off the ground. And so he called that a tatami shot. Because... it was eye level with people sitting on a tatami mat.
Oh, I thought it was because it was named after his favorite movie, Tommy Boy.
if only he would have lived to see that.
Yep.
I don't think he would have cared for it.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's more like an Alfred Hitchcock movie. He prefers... Alfred Hitchcock likes those kind of comedies.
Really?
His daughter said his favorite movie was... Crap, what is the one? It's not Smokey and the Bandit, or maybe it is. Maybe it's Smokey and the Bandit. Okay, anyways, that was apparently one of Hitchcock's favorite movies, and he used to screen it like every week. So I like Ozu sitting around. See, yeah, I don't know what kind of like Ozu's tastes were. I feel like maybe Akira Kurosawa would have been into that.
Yeah, probably.
Because I think he just watched whatever.
Yeah, Ozu, from what I could gather from what I read, like, he just seemed like a private person.
Yeah.
So, aside from low angles, he would use a 50mm lens, because that's the lens that is that's closest to human sight. And, like, apparently, he was, the studio would ask why not use other lenses, and he said... He was like, well, 50mm is the best one. Why use something else?
Yeah, I guess, you know, it worked.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently he would exclusively use 50mm for most of his career. Never, like, yeah. never a wide lens or anything.
Hmm.
And, the camera for him is very still, and it's... I say place like in a Wes Anderson movie, but Wes Anderson does it in an Ozu way, where it's very still and things are arranged in a very particular way, and like the shot is like composed very intricately.
Right, and you get a sense of like the construction of a house or a place that they're at, because it's, you know, the characters feel the environments feel lived in that way.
Yeah. Like something he would do a lot is, he would have the camera just in an empty room, point to like the door. And then you would just see someone walk by in a hallway, and then the camera would cut to them in the next room.
Yeah.
So, like, this really, it's like very naturalistic stuff like that. And he was more concerned with, and like in his shots, there's a lot of straight lines dissecting the frame. And he would frequently have like similar objects. So, and I think it's late spring, there's a shot of the two leads' bikes parked, like, at some post or whatever, and then the two leads are off in a distance, and you see, like, the bike wheels, like, level with each other, and you see, like, you know, circles, and, like, the two circles within each other, or do you see, like, a bunch of, like, square windows or, like, with boxes that are square-shaped in a shot. Like, it's very particular.
Yeah.
Your friends within frames was something he was big fan of. Oh yeah, and he liked to blur subjectivity with objectivity, and so the story would always typically be an ensemble movie, so you'd get the perspective of everyone. So it's not, you know, he's not withholding any information from the viewer. He's just showing, you know, everything. Like, every person's opinion of what's happening. And he would typically start and end a film on the same motif.
Yeah, makes sense.
Let's see, he did this in No Arm Afternoon, So, like, a big part of that was about father-daughter relationship, where they help each other out, and they are growing apart, and she gets in the dark, gets married, and in the movie, you never see the wedding. Like, he would skip over major plot points like that, unless they were emotionally important. So, like, you'd see the emotional build-up before, and then the emotional release afterwards.
Mm.
So he's more concerned with trying to get... I don't know. I feel like I'm boring.
He's more concerned with you being allowed to fill in the blanks with the dramatical parts, because everyone knows what a wedding looks like, yeah. Right?
Something like that. Like, based off of what I have seen, I've seen like maybe eight of his movies or so. But I feel like a lot of stuff is based off of the irony of everyday life. Like in I Flunked, which we'll get to. I'll say it for later. But I feel like he played with like the irony of like, well...
Yeah, that's all right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, is this very...
You know, I haven't watched it enough to know for sure what his home life thing is like. That most of the ones I've watched have been actually rather light, and I know he has some drama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I know Tokyo Story is a drama, so I'd be interested in seeing that. But most of them feel like we're just getting these, like I said, just snapshots of these characters' lives. Like they're even where they're working, when they're hanging out with their friends, their family, you know, interactions. He seems to like working with children, which is kind of weird. I don't think I know very many directors that would have felt like that way, but he definitely features children in several of them.
And
somehow manages to make them adorable, which is also a feat. That's probably why he's considered a master.
Yeah, they never seem annoying.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I never noticed that.
Yeah. Just enough kid, you know, action. I can't even think of an American movie. Maybe Wes Anderson, but he's got a thing where he makes the kids act basically like little adults.
Yeah, I guess so. Spielberg. I don't know. I can't think of any other director who like has done multiple like movies featuring children strongly.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't seem like most people like to do that. Maybe, oh, you know what?
Ozu never even had a family or kids.
What's the name of the director who did all those teen movies that are super famous, like The Breakfast Club and stuff like that?
Oh, John Hughes?
Yeah, John Hughes had a couple of movies with prominent children actors and stuff like that. At least intended to. And also, I mean, he wrote Home Alone. Obviously, he expected children to be in that movie. Although I don't know if he ever expected to direct it himself.
Yeah,
but I'm thinking of like Dutch. A bunch of the John Candy stuff had kids in it too. But yeah, Ozu children, at least from what I've seen, like they're annoying little brats. Really, they are. Like you see them acting on screen, but you can't help but be like super charmed. It's great.
Yeah, even by the kid Good Morning who shits his pants.
Yeah, well, you just that kid. Yeah, let's get into this. Let's talk about. Let's start with the silent one because I think I enjoyed that list.
Okay. I want to end with this with a quote from Ozu.
Okay.
He would compare himself to a tofu chef. He apparently when asked about like making movies, he would say, "I just want to make good tofu." Like he had no.
I'm not pretension. Sure that's. I'm not sure that's a complimentary thing.
Well, like he's kind of like Kurosawa, or Kurosawa. Even when he received his Lifetime Achievement Award from the Oscars. He said something along the lines of, I'm still learning how to make film. I'm still, you know, I'm still learning. And he was very humble about it. I feel like Ozu was also very humble about, like, his art.
I think that's how Miyazaki in that Studio Ghibli documentary that came out a couple of years ago. What's it called? Something Burden of No Something. Anyway, he like talks about his career. It's like, you know, these people love my movies, but I'm just doing my job. Like he doesn't think he's doing anything special. Like, you know, I go to work, I do work, and then I go home. It seems strange to me because I do think a lot of directors in the U.S. just get, probably because of the Hollywood system, just get put on these pedestals and then start to believe that about themselves.
Yeah, it's just, we mentioned before, but it's like there's a scale of, like, the Japanese system versus the American system is, Hollywood is a much bigger scale. So, like, of course, people's egos would get, you know, out of control. Can't be potentially get out of control, where you have, you know, like the masters like Kurosawa and Ozu, who are just like, it's a job that I like to do.
And one of them that you didn't mention that was influenced by Ozu is I do feel like the Coen brothers have some movies that have very similar parts to Ozu's style, like things in Fargo or even No Country for Old Men. Outside of the action-y bits, there's just some parts where it just feels like we're just seeing a slice of these people's lives, and this is a normal person we're talking to.
Yeah, I never even thought of the Coens.
Yeah. I haven't thought of them in a while. Now I want to go watch a Coen Brothers movie.
Let's see. So, yeah, the first one we both watched is I Flunked But from 1930. It's Shichiku film, because that's the studio where Ozu worked for his whole career.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice who the female lead was?
No.
Kinoyu Tanaka from Wedding Ring. It's Tanaka number 8.
Oh, interesting.
Yep. Oh, another interesting thing is she was 21 when the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
And when she did Wedding Ring, she was 41. So she was over a decade older than Toshiro.
Hmm.
Which you don't see that in American movies where the woman is older.
Yeah, not unless they can play young. You know, if they don't look like they're older.
Yeah,
I think that's more likely to happen. But it is also much more likely to be the other way around.
Yeah, like, you know, I love the movie Charade. It's weird the age gap between Cary Grant and Hepburn.
Yeah, but everyone's age appropriate in I Flunked But, except for the fact that, like I said, they look like they're all 30 and they're all supposed to be college kids.
Yeah. Well, except for Tanaka, she looks like a young 20-something.
Oh, yeah, she does. Yeah. Have you seen... How much Harold Lloyd have you seen?
Zero.
Oh, okay. Because I've only seen Safety Last.
I only learned of Harold Lloyd because of Futurama, because Zoidberg's uncle is the Harold Lloyd type actor. Do you remember that episode?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, there's an episode where Zoidberg has a uncle who's like super rich, or who also was a movie star, and it's based off of Harold Lloyd.
I see. I mean, yeah. I guess he's up there with Buster Keaton and Chaplin, although I feel like he's a lot less known.
Yeah, I've never seen any Chaplin. I've seen bits of Chaplin, but I've never seen a whole Chaplin movie or whole Buster Keaton movie or whole... Well, I've never even seen anything Harold Lloyd. I just know, this one being like a film nerd, I know of him and his, you know, career. In the 20s.
You watch a couple, they're really short.
And it's not that, I just haven't been exposed to anything from him.
I see. The General was really good, Buster Keaton. I did like Safety Last, but if I'm going to compare that to I Flunked, but the only parts that were similar where when he was goofing off with his friends, which I enjoyed, you know, they got their special little dance they all do together and trying to do, you know, they're just trying to cheat their way through this college class.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I enjoyed it up until the point where it became all about, I assume, the handsome leading guy there, who kind of had a Harold Lloyd face, you know, he was emotive, but not crazy emotive. His emotions mostly were like, I'm very sad. This movie.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with silent. This is the first silent film I've seen in its entirety.
Well, so, you've never seen a silent movie except for this?
Correct.
Spencer!
I tried to watch Spencer. One on Fandor a while
Get
ago.
Get out of here!
That was like a 3-hour epic. After 20 minutes, I'm like, I can't do this. I need I'm talking.
That's not... Don't jump into the deep end, man.
It was like from Norway from the 20s. I'm like, well, I gotta watch it.
But okay, this is a discussion we have to have off the air.
Okay.
We can't.
I'll watch Buster Keaton stuff. I've seen clips of his stuff.
Well, this is the first. Okay, I want to hear what you think then. Then if this was the first semi-full-length silent film you've seen.
Well, I found the plot hard to follow because I'm so used to there being sound. And I thought there was music with silent film.
That's one of the problems with this. There is usually, if not music from the time period, like somebody will have like subbed in music, especially in something that has been remastered or something like that. Mm-hmm. This is the version that we watched was on Filmstrike, and it has nothing. It is just a silent movie, literally. So I imagine, I mean, you don't really need music or anything like that, but it does add to the enjoyment of the feature.
I found this, like, it being so silent to be, it kind of dragged for me.
Yeah.
The whole time. I thought parts of it were funny, and I did like when all the guys are goofing off, but.
Yeah.
And when they, like, when you first see Tanaka, and, like, they're doing, like, shadow monsters or whatever.
Oh, you don't know what they were doing? They were spelling out, we need bread and something in shadows.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, they had, like, a whole system. It was fun.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I don't know. I just wasn't...
No, I didn't find this movie particularly entertaining, except for a few parts. Like, even as I'm not an expert in silent movies. I've watched a bunch, but I'm not crazy about them. But I think, like I said, once these guys, because the story of this movie is there's five students, they're all in college, which apparently in Japan back then you still had to wear a uniform when you were in college. Weird.
Yeah, I think that was a thing in, like, U.S. and Japan until, like, the 60s.
No, that is weird to me. Yeah, but they are in their, like, final exams for, you know, graduating into the workforce. That's what you do. You graduate, you immediately go into the workforce. And these five goofballs have a system where they... try to pass answers to each other through a bunch of different ways. Their teacher has a ridiculously fake mustache, which is like what's going on there. And they try to pass a note by pinning it to his back, but they can't get the note off. And, pratfalls, funny stuff. One of the ways that they have got the answers is that they wrote all of the notes that they needed on the back of one of the larger guy's shirts, his white shirt. And they try to pass it from there, but it doesn't work out. So they get everything ready again for the next test that they have to take. I'm not sure if it's a retest or whatever. They write down all the answers on the white shirt, and they all go to bed. And the landlady sees this shirt hanging up and thinks, oh, it's dirty, takes it, gives it to the launder. So there goes all the answers out the window. Next day, they all take the test. They all flunk, except there's one guy with glasses that I think was like trying to tutor them while they were also learning or whatever.
Yeah, some nerd.
And he passes, and he's begging for them, like, please give him another chance. Like, no, they failed. We're not going to give him another chance. The main guy, who I assume is Tetsuo Saito.
Probably.
Yeah. He's just labeled as student, so it doesn't really say, but he's listed first in the credits, and it seems like he's been in a bunch of other silent films. And he, you know, he's really sad. He lives with the guy with the glasses who passed the class. All his other buddies don't seem to care so much. They're all pretty carefree, you know. They're still doing their, like, step-and-step dancing type thing that they do, which, you know, it's, like, super entertaining to watch that. That's very Harold Lloyd-like. Like, we've got a thing we do, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know. But he goes back home. He's ashamed, you know. He's very ashamed of that stuff. He takes out this super sharp pair of scissors. He, like, oh, you know, he realizes they're sharp by touching it with his finger. Then he pokes himself in the neck with it, and he's like, oh, it is really sharp. He turns around, and we're supposed to be like, oh, my God, is he committing suicide? No, he's just cutting his toenails.
That was
funny to somebody.
That creeped me out. I don't like toenails.
What'd you do, rip off your own? Come on. Everybody's got toenails.
I know, but I don't like seeing toenails in movies like that.
Yeah. So basically the story winds down to that he decides he's not going to give up, and he goes back to class, you know, when the new semester starts. And even his buddies who did graduate, they're not finding jobs right away, so they're kind of like, oh man, I wish we could go back to class too.
Yeah, like that's what I was talking about, like the irony of everyday life. Of like, you know, it's going to be great. We're going to go get great jobs out of colleges. And it's like, oh, that doesn't happen to everyone.
Yeah.
Which is like a recurring theme of the other stuff I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Like, life is just not, you're not going to skyrocket to the top. But, no. You know, life is cool anyways.
Yeah, it's a disappointment, but it's not that much of a disappointment.
There's a scene where Tetsuo Saito, I assume this lady is his girlfriend. She works at, like, a bakery.
Yeah, that's Tanaka.
Nearby. Yeah. And there's a scene where he goes in to visit with her, and he eats, like, 17 cakes. I mean, he's just stuffing his gourd. She, like, has to stop him by putting the lid down. Like, nope. Because I don't think he's paying for it either.
Probably not.
Yeah. I also watched the Lost one. That they only have like 10 minutes of.
Oh, I graduated, but.
Yeah. That is very similar to Safety Last, because the story of Safety Last is Harold Lloyd has moved to the city from the country, and because he was going to find a big job and be able to pay for everything, and his girlfriend is waiting for him to like send for her to come move in with him. And so he keeps, you know, he's getting jobs, losing jobs, all kinds of crazy stuff. But he keeps sending back letters with, like, gifts that he's buying with, like, he can't even afford to pay rent, but he wants to make it look like he's been getting lots of money, so he'll, like, buy a necklace and send it to her and stuff like that. And in I Graduated, But... the character's mother, like, comes from out of town and is like, oh, you wrote to me and said you already had a job, but, oh, he doesn't have a job yet. So, but that's only, like I said, it's a Lost film. There's only 10 minutes of it, so you don't really get much from it. Didn't seem like a comedy compared to I Flunked.
Is a Harold Lloyd stuff on Filmstruck?
Yeah, a lot of it is.
Isn't Buster Keaton stuff on Filmstruck too?
I'm not sure. I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't think it's as prominent on there. Like, I don't think Criterion has a Buster Keaton collection the way they do it with Chaplin and Lloyd.
Because only Buster Keaton thing I've seen was his Twilight Zone. He did one like season 5. I think, where it's a dumb story. It's not worth getting into, but you see, like, a 60, 70-year-old Buster Keaton still doing his own stunts in pratfalls. And, like, he's still, like, very physically active as, like, an old man. And his voice is kind of jarring to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he kept on working.
Yeah.
Until his death, pretty much. The last thing I remember seeing him in was he has a very small cameo in Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the parts I liked of the movie.
Yeah.
Where you see him very briefly.
Yeah. Yeah, on Filmstruck, the only thing it looks like he... Oh, no, no. It looks like there's a bunch of things that... No? No. Stop that. Go back. I'm trying to find Buster Keaton, you jerk. Yeah, he's only in the Charlie Chaplin movie, Limelight.
Hmm.
But a bunch of other stuff is like... There's stuff on Netflix, I think. There, at least there was for a long time. Like The General and College and Seven Brides.
Which is a train one where he does a crazy stunt and almost gets killed.
That's The General.
That's The General.
Yeah, and that's an amazing movie.
I've heard.
You just have to ignore the part that he is a Southern soldier.
Yeah. Every talk zone about the Civil War is focused on a Southern soldier.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of weird that Sterling, who was Jewish, would focus on the Confederates so much.
I feel like it makes for a better story because they've got so much more, like, to regret.
Yeah.
So you want to move on to the next one?
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning to you. It's much later, but,
No, good morning.
No, it's like 6:51, it's evening.
No, it's night here, too. I'm saying the movie's called Good Morning.
Oh, the movie Good Morning. Yeah. Vietnam!
No, it's the one with a bunch of fart jokes and kids.
Now, when I said that had fart jokes, you did all caps. Is that because you knew there were fart jokes in this movie, or were you genuinely surprised?
I was genuinely surprised.
Okay.
I wouldn't expect this kind of comedy with Ozu.
I mean, yeah, I don't... I mean, we're talking about fart jokes here, but seriously, the way this movie opens is we kind of get like an outside view of the town that it's going to take place in, and then we see kids on their way to school walking on this hill that's above the town. Literally, there's four kids.
Four of them's
a very a little kid, and then three older boys, and they stop and start pushing each other on the forehead, and when they do, all of a sudden you hear. It's not a very realistic fart sound, and at first you're like, is that what? And then and then finally the last kid gets pushed on the forehead, doesn't work. Pushed again, doesn't work. Pushed a third time, you hear and they're like, yeah, you did it wrong. Okay, let's go. Except for that kid doesn't want to go. It's like, come on, we need to walk to school. Kid doesn't move. They leave without him. Next thing we see, that kid is back at home. Mom, I need new pants.
This happens like three times in the movie.
And the parents are like, again?
It ends on that joke.
Yep. Next time you're in town, get some more pants for our son. What? You know, cheap ones. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's the movie isn't just fart and shit jokes.
Isn't it, though? No, it isn't. It is not. Yeah, I mean, it's a little story about kind of like the gossip and inner workings of this tiny community. Because they're... is like you said, there's a battling of modernity, mm-hmm. of society moving on, and then this also politeness thing that they still have with each other. You know, you see people typically getting up, you know, preparing meals the way they do. The children are supposed to be learning English, but one of the families has a TV in their house, and so the kids always want to go over there and watch sumo wrestling, because why? What the hell else would you do when you're a kid? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
But the parents don't want them hanging out on the TV there.
Well, because the couple that lives there, they kind of hint that they do sexual stuff.
Well, they're definitely unscrupulous. They always hang out in their robes, they say.
Yeah, and you know what that means.
Yep. They walk around, they're singing as they're walking around, you know, suspicious stuff.
And they're younger, so, too.
Yeah, we don't really get the story of what's going on with them. They're just kind of like a thing. Yeah, mostly it's about... Well, now I'm kind of... It's mostly about the two boys, I guess.
Yeah, these two brothers who want a TV, and their dad, who is played by Shichu Ryu. I think that's her dad. He's in this one.
It's Shichu Ryu.
And he tells them no. And he says something along the lines of, I want you two to shut up. And they stop talking.
Yep. They decide they're not going to say another word. And the older boy, you know, he's adamant. He doesn't want to do it. The little boy's a little more... he's just trying to, you know, be like his older brother. He wants to be cool or whatever. But anytime he wants to say something, he does the okay symbol, the circle with your thumb and your pointer finger. And so sometimes he gets to talk. But yeah, these kids are... The little boy especially is just adorable. Like...
Yeah.
There's the part when they're leaving the house and their mom's like, you're not going next door to watch TV, right? You're supposed to be, you know, taking your English lessons. The older boy's like, okay, yeah, see ya, or something like that. And the little boy goes, I love you.
He says that a lot.
Yeah, I think that's the only English he actually knows.
Yeah, I'm guessing wildly here, but I don't think he knows what that means.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. It's like a something you could say when you're leaving the house. I love you. It reminds me of, I think it's, Early Summer. There's a part where the little kid is talking to his grandpa, who has like a box with like treats in it. And he's like, give me one of those treats. Like, okay, you have to tell me you love me to get a treat. And it's like, I love you, hands him a treat. I love you, hands him another treat. I love you, hands him another treat. I love you. Oh, I'm all out of treats. Okay, so the kid walks away. And right before he walks out of the scene, he turns around and says, I hate you. Leaves. It's great. That's what I'm talking about. Kid actors are irritating, but not these kid actors.
Yeah, I feel like Ozu has a very specific type of actor he'd work with.
Yeah. And I also enjoyed like the stupid gossip drama thing going on. Like, I don't know what they're talking about. Some money collection.
The women's club monthly fees. All the moms claim they paid it, or they gave it to someone to pay it. It gets convoluted and it's never resolved.
Well, it is resolved, but these old ladies just love to gossip, so it doesn't really matter.
I kind of got lost in all of that gossip.
Yeah, the lady who the boy's mother was the last person who had the money, and she gave it, she said, to the woman that was supposed to give it to the person that it belonged to. And everyone's like, no, I gave it to them. Like, well, she's saying that she never got it. You know, she bought a washing machine. Maybe she spent it on that, all this stuff like that. So spreading all this drama. And then it turns out that she gave it to the head woman's mother, who forgot about it because she's an old woman. And she's like, is this envelope the money? Like, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. So... The woman who was accusing her of stealing the money goes and apologizes. And she's like, oh, it's fine. Don't worry about it. You know, like it never happened as far as I'm concerned. So the next day, these kids are not talking to anyone. Like the adults are like, oh, good morning. Are you waiting for blah, blah, blah? Kids are not saying a word. They're not saying a word to anybody. So the gossipy lady automatically assumes she told her kids about what happened and now they're mad at me. She's a real, you know, bitch, basically. Yeah. And that part never gets resolved.
No.
But whatever. Gossipy.
Yeah. They get a TV. Yeah, the boys get a TV eventually.
Yeah. And that's another slice of life part, because they're talking about, you know, the dad goes to work and he stops by a bar where one of the other parents from the community has been looking for work, but he could still afford a drink, I guess. So he's getting tanked every night. And at the end, he finally gets a job where he's selling, like, appliances and stuff. So they buy a TV from him as, like, a thank you or a celebration.
Yeah. I think the guy he buys it from is Ichiro Tono. He's an innkeeper in Yojimbo.
He did look familiar. I'm not.
He's in some Kurosawa stuff. I think it's in Seven Samurai. Yeah, he's a character actor I like when he shows up.
Yeah.
He always kind of had like a craggly looking face.
Yeah. Yeah, I see him right there.
Yeah.
It's also Samurai, Yojimbo, High and Low. Pigs and Battleships.
I need to watch that again.
You guys been in all kinds of good stuff. I was thinking of writing into Film Spotting SVU and say, hey, people, watch this. Actually, I think, didn't they like mention that somewhere else, like on the Flophouse or something like that?
What?
Pigs and Battleships.
Maybe.
I always feel like they do that. Like, we're about to cover something and we're like so excited, and then somebody else covers it. Like, oh, now they're going to think we're talking about it because they talked about it there.
Yeah. I don't know. I must maybe cut out, but I requested that Alcoholic would do Pigs and Battleships.
Oh yeah, that'll be great.
Because I know they like Coen Brothers stuff, so they like it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I, you know, also they like very serious movies, so I told them to watch Quincy's Quest. Makes sense. Probably not gonna do that.
They did The Baby, and, so they might.
Yeah, that's true. So like, so there's a kid's story. There is, by the way, they are all eating pumice stone dust because somebody told them it would make them fart better. And then they're like, no, that's going to get stuck in your intestine. You're going to die. Oh, crap. We better stop it. And besides that, there is a younger woman who lives there that is sisters with, I believe, their mother.
Yeah.
And she occasionally is helping this person who's, or she hired somebody who's translating something for a business. And there's kind of like a, not really a romance, but like, you get the feeling that there's supposed to be some sort of thing going on with them.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of Wedding Ring, kind of, where it's, you know, they like each other clearly, but
right.
You know, they're kind of being taken slow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like they're concentrating on different things. It's not like she's a over 30 old biddy like the lady in Early Summer. Come on, don't be ridiculous.
With Good Morning, that's another how am I going with that? So the reason it's called Good Morning is that the older kid doesn't like the social role of you're supposed to say good morning, how are you, because he thinks it's all pointless and meaningless, because it kind of is, but it's also this what you do,
right? So it's social order, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, so you say good morning to your neighbors because that's a nice thing to do.
Yeah, the him is like, if you don't mean it, why say it? But it's a good, like, that's like, I remember as a kid thinking stuff like that, and then now I'm like, oh, I understand why. Like, why we do things the way we do.
Yeah. Exactly. But now we got a president that's not afraid to say what he thinks. So, okay, that's not this podcast. Sorry. No. So the climax of this movie, like we said, they do end up getting a TV at the end. But before that, they actually, the two kids, they're finding not being able to communicate is stopping them from doing a lot of things. Like they are basically forced to start doing their English training and stuff like that by themselves. They if they want a snack, they can't ask for it anymore. All these things like that. So they end up stealing the rice that's being prepared for dinner for the evening, along with some other stuff. And they run off to a nearby reservoir to, like, eat, you know, as much as they can with their hands. And the little kid's like, this is sticky. It's kind of gross. It's like, yeah, it is gross, but we have to do this if we're going to eat. And a cop walks by, and they think, oh, crap, we're going to get in trouble. So they run off. And it ends up being a bigger thing because they don't come home at the end of the night. So they have to, you know, people go out looking for them. And eventually the person who finds them is the guy who was doing the translations. So that's, you know, just peeking in kind of thing, like, hey, this is your house. People recognize me. I'm a nice guy. What's up? I mean, it's hard to explain. It's just a nice little scene.
Yeah.
The kids weren't really in danger or anything like that.
No. Like, this is a good example of, Ozu didn't really care about time in his movies. There was never a clear indication of.
Yeah, we don't need to see everything spelled out either way. You know, we don't see these kids out in the cold or anything like that. Once they run away, we don't see them again until they're found. And it's not even a big deal. And I think that has to do with the general pacing that he looks for. He doesn't want to get people fired up about anything like that. I think he's more interested in amusing people and keeping them interested. Oh yeah, and that trashy couple moves away, but there's not really an explanation for that other than they think that people are talking crap about them, I think.
Oh yeah, and so this is another style thing from earlier. Frequently, like the dialogue scenes, it would be the camera is like a face is directly facing the person speaking.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. It feels like it's almost like they are talking to the camera, but they are looking very slightly off screen. And he does that with every character. Like,
yeah. It reminds me of Spike Lee and Do the Right Thing. Mm-hmm. They're cut away to that. And I think there's maybe one or two of that in Jungle Fever. And he does a lot of that in Red Hook Summer. Like, Spike Lee, I think, took that and made it, you know, his own spin.
Yeah. I'm not as familiar, obviously.
With Spike Lee? Well, you should be.
I apologize.
Even his not-so-great stuff is still interesting.
I watch some Spike Lee, you watch silent movies.
Okay. So you've seen Early Summer? Spring?
I've seen Early Summer and Early Spring, actually. The first one I saw was Early Spring, which is a little bit more scandalous than the other ones that I've seen so far, because it is about a person having an affair with another person. But I don't remember anything. There's nothing like crazy dramatic or anything like that happens. So, you know, somebody's heart gets broken, they end the affair. I actually don't remember it that well, but I liked it a lot, apparently, because I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. I gotta rewatch it. But I remember certain scenes. I remember certain scenes, like, actually feeling resonant with me, because I've been in situations where I had to, like, have conversations the characters are having, like, you know, this isn't working out, you know. Whatever else is going on. Yeah. And Early Summer it's very much like Good Morning, slice, like I said, slice of life situation. we follow, what is her character's name? It's Setsuko O'Hara, which is an, she's in a whole bunch of Ozu stuff.
Isn't Noriko in that one? Another one.
Yeah.
Was it summer or spring?
Early summer.
Summer.
Yeah, and she's like in her late 20s, and everyone's afraid she's not going to get married. And it has a lot of... It's actually a lot of fun to watch, like, the interaction she's having, because she doesn't take it very seriously, you know, this whole, like, oh, you need to get married, you're getting so old, and stuff like that. And the way people worry about that stuff, the family life and dynamics that they have, is really interesting to watch. I'd recommend either of those, for sure.
Yeah, I have seen, I think I've seen both of them. I can't remember. So one I've seen, I've also seen Record of Tenement Gentlemen. And so the one from the 40s is Record of Tenement Gentlemen, which is about a small community in this, like, impoverished part of a larger city, although you don't really know what city. And this person played by Shichu Ryu, he finds this kid who was abandoned, and it brings the kid to the community, and this old widow kind of ends up having to take care of the kid, and she always scolds him because he keeps wetting the bed, and he has to clean up the mattress that he ruins every morning. And then she slowly grows to really like him and potentially see him as a son. And it's really sweet and heartwarming to see this kind of forgive my phrasing, cold-hearted woman become, you know, like a sweet, you know, mother. And then at the end, in classic Ozu irony of real life, the father comes back because the father lost the son and was looking for his son in the area, and he doesn't know what happened to his son. And so he takes away his son, and the woman is like, well, I'm too old to have kids, and her neighbor is like, well, you can adopt. And so it ends with a shot of this area of, like, Tokyo or wherever it takes place. And all these, with all these kids who presumably their parents are dead or left. And it's this kind of this weird, bittersweet ending of, like, you know, she can just take in those kids, but also they're, all those kids are orphans.
Yes, that's that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird ending. This was his comeback film after doing Propaganda.
I see.
It's still really good and worth watching.
The moral of the story is, remember, there's always these kids with dead parents. I don't think.
Well, I guess the moral is you can always adopt, I guess.
I, the moral is children are wonderful.
Yeah. Even though Ozu had no children.
Right.
No, he was so good at the family dynamic. I find it odd that he never had a family. He probably had, like, nieces and nephews, but he never, you know, had, like, kids or a wife or anything.
Right.
Oh, and the other Ozus I've seen are The End of Summer, his penultimate film, An Autumn Afternoon, his last film, A Tokyo Story. I think Late Spring and Floating Weeds. Not the silent one, the remake he did 25 years later in color.
Hmm.
Because Floating Weeds is a remake of his own movie from a quarter of a century before.
Yeah.
I have seen Late Autumn, too, from 1960.
Was that?
I have seen Late Autumn, his third to last movie.
Well, see, then you should be the expert. Come on.
I don't know. you can go over the plots, but it's not really...
No, I agree. Yeah, it doesn't.
You just kind of need to experience it.
Yeah.
And I have to say good morning kind of way at the top for me.
It's pretty dang good, yeah.
It's just nice seeing Ozu be kind of light and goofy.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually have sound to illustrate
and,
that.
And color.
Yeah.
Looks real nice. And the soundtrack is particularly amusing. It almost feels like a cartoon soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. It does
have like score, a, that is.
Yeah, like kind of animated feel.
Yeah.
And I guess we kind of covered his, how he's similar to Kurosawa and not so similar.
Right. Do you know if they had any interactions at all?
I couldn't find anything. I imagine they must have. I'm sure they knew who each other were.
It seems like they were... Oh, yeah, I'm sure they watched each other's movies at the very least. It seems like they were... it seems like they were both big movie fans. So we're not done with Ozu, even with this special, though, because we're going to be watching... What, which one are we watching?
The next very special episode will be in August, which is the end of summer. And we're going to watch the end of summer. And the next episode proper will be Tokyo Twilight, which is James Mangold, director of Wolverine and Logan and other Wolverine-related films, said Tokyo Twilight is one of the greatest films of all time.
Well, if anyone knows, it's going to be him.
Yeah.
He did make The Wolverine, after all.
Never seen it, but I hear it's okay.
You know, you may have just keyed into why I didn't like it. If he was trying to imitate, like, Ozu or any Japanese directors. It's not a good movie. Like, people say, oh, it's good... Especially compared to Wolverine Origins. Like, you know what? Fateful Findings is good compared to Wolverine Origins, so whatever.
Well, Fateful Findings has a singular focus, and that's Neil Breen.
Yeah.
Another one's the studio garbage.
They're very similar when you think about it.
I don't know. I think Neil Breen has a vision.
Yeah, he has a vision.
He's gonna save us from the government.
No one else wants to see it, but he has a vision.
Okay, so you have another show where you talk about Neil Breen movies with Josh Hollywood Hollis?
I mean, that happened once. Okay. And the episode is kind of messed up, so... I mean, it's still good, but yeah, my voice is all messed up. Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space is a weekly science fiction and fantasy movie where me and my co-hosts Sarah and Aaron talk about a different science fiction and or fantasy movie each week. We just kind of like have fun with that stuff. Sometimes we watch a random movie. We watch listener picks. Yeah, so Fateful Findings recently, the next one that's coming out for us, which will be released before this episode comes out, is Starman, John Carpenter.
No, I've heard of that. I don't know what it is.
It's a really good movie. Like, I think I gave it 5 out of 5. That's how good I think it was. And then we actually are going to be doing a special event, the Summer of Love Beach Party Podcast special, where we're going to watch non-science fiction and fantasy movies for just a month. First movie is going to be Leon, a.k.a. The Professional. And then after that, Aaron and Sarah. And our good friend Spencer is going to pick some movies for us to watch.
Oh, you know what my pick is.
Yes, I do, but I'm pretending that I don't.
Okay. Now, it's from the continent of Africa. I'll leave it
at that. The Gods Must Be Crazy.
No, it's another movie.
The Gods Must Be Crazy Too. What about your stuff?
As of the recording, I have been on School of Schlock talking about Return of the Kung Fu Dragon. It has a interesting kung fu movie from the 70s. It's on YouTube if you want to watch it. And listen to my episode of School of Schlock. It's a lot of fun. I talk about RuPaul's Drag Race and other stuff on it. Yeah, so there's that, and I'll be on a grind bin in August, because they're doing a special fan event thing, talking about Coonskin, the Ralph Bakshi film, trying to empower black people, sort of, I guess. If you just watch it, if you're curious, it's something. It has Barry White in it, doing the voice of the cartoon bear. Could get it?
Nope.
Barry White? Do you get it?
Oh, bear? No, that's a terrible joke.
Yeah, I know. Ralph actually thought it was hilarious.
I mean, if we're plugging other things we're going to be on, yeah, I'm going to be on... Oh, man, what is the name of that podcast?
The Realist?
Yeah, I'm going to be on an episode of The Realist talking about Taxi Driver pretty soon. And I've already been on two episodes, one talking about The Shawshank Redemption and the other one talking about Sophie's Choice. So I only pick the happiest movies to be on.
Indeed, I signed up for High Noon, because that's the only one of the movies that I like that wasn't covered yet.
Oh, yeah.
But High Noon is going to be, like, in a year.
That's a great movie.
It is great.
If you like High Noon, you should listen to the Please Don't Send Me Outer Space episode on Outland, starring Sean Connery.
I'm reviewing for my column on old science fiction horror TV.
Have some enthusiasm.
And, The Immortal, which was a TV movie starring Jessica Walter from Arrested Development. Then, you know, the alcoholic mom. This time not playing alcohol. Oh, wait, she is an alcoholic again in this one. Anyway, I just realized that she plays an alcoholic a lot. I've covered other stuff with her where she also played an alcoholic. And if you watch Arrested Development, she also was an alcoholic. Anyway.
Yeah, and the voice of the character in Archer, is that an alcoholic?
I think so.
Yeah, I definitely remember her drinking. I'm not sure.
She is a real type. Anyway, yeah, so she's in it. It's called Immortal, where... It's kind of like the Incredible Hulk TV show, but instead of the Hulk just wandering around town helping people, it's this guy who is immortal. This crazy millionaire is trying to track him down to get his blood to be immortal, because he's an evil millionaire for some reason. It's not explained, but it's worth watching. It's a great TV movie that spawned a series that got canceled before ABC let them film a final episode. Because NABC has not released it on DVD or anything. But you can watch the pilot, not the series. The pilot is... I mean, the series is... they want to act like it does not exist. But it happened. Don't tell me it didn't happen.
That's it. It didn't happen.
It happened.
Okay, we'll see you next week, then. Right? Right?
Yeah, Pineapple Party. Not Gonna Die Forever. Thug Life. Alfida Zane.
No, man, no one knows what you're talking about anymore.
No, I don't know what I'm talking about anymore.
All right, bye.
See ya. The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. The show's Twitter is @highandlowpod. The show is available on SoundCloud, iTunes, and the Google Play Store. Please rate and review wherever you listen to it, and thank you for listening.